is the last week in this little series. Are there more choices we could explore? Yeah, there are. But if you get down the three that we've talked about already, and then you add in this one, I have a promise for you. You're going to be well on your way to living a relationship with Christ that is full and complete. Your relationship will actually grow. So let's talk about first the choices that we've already discussed. Now, if you think about it, these are not just choices I want to make. These are must-haves. If you don't make these choices, then there is no chance that your relationship is actually going to grow. That's how important they are. They're musts. First, you must choose purpose over popularity. It's got to happen. You've got to focus on your purpose and not just what makes you happy and not what's popular with the world. You're just going to have to make that kind of a choice. You're going to have to choose surrender over control. And trust me, my teeth are gritting when I say those words. You're going to have to let go. You're going to have to surrender some things to God in your life and say, you know what? I'm pushing all the chips into the middle. It's yours. Take control. Now, that doesn't mean you get one of those driver's ed cars that has a wheel on both sides or even a brake so you can stop. Understand, you've moved and God is now in control of the vehicle. You're going to have to choose to be disciplined instead of neglect. When God puts opportunities in front of you, you have to take them. When God gives you things that you're supposed to do, you have to do them. You can't just pass it off as, you know what, I'll get to it tomorrow, or I'll get to it when I get to it. We're going to have to be disciplined if we're going to live in a growing relationship. And the funny thing is, this is not just about a relationship with Christ. Like I said, you could apply this to a marriage relationship. You could apply this to a parenting relationship. You can apply it to an employee-employer relationship. All of these things are choices we have to make if we're going to live in relationships. And our relationship with God is no different. Now, here's what you know. This is not an either-or. There is not a some. This is an either-or. It's not a sometimes this and a sometimes that. The moment you choose to take these decisions out of your life, then you understand you start going backwards. There is no standing still. You don't reach a plateau and you've arrived and I can sit down and stop making these hard choices and just move on. It's a daily battle. It's something that you just have to keep choosing over and over and over and over. So let's talk about that video because there's a lot of words we could use to describe that poor man sitting there. First of all, as you're listening to his phone conversation at the end, you realize who he's talking to. His wife. Could you imagine sitting in the middle of a restaurant just yelling at your wife over the phone about all those different things? But you see, the man has a problem. How would we describe him? He's frazzled. Isn't that what his side dish was? Just bring me an order of frazzle. My nerves are just out there. They're just all exposed. He's frustrated. He's angry. He's upset. He's frustrated because things that need to get done aren't getting done. He's hurried. How did he tell the man he wanted it? I don't care what the recipe is. Just get it out here so I can consume it and move on to the next thing in my life. He's demanding. Now, I don't care about the recipe. Hey, buddy, when you have a chance, do this. He's upset. He's upset because somebody was supposed to be in a recital and now he doesn't want to play the piano. And so he just gets angry at them. It's a little on the rude side. Did you notice the waiter's face, who was happy the other 3 weeks? He didn't seem so happy this week. He was trying to get away from this man. And when the man called him back, he's like, please don't make me go back to that table. Maybe the best word to describe that man is me. I can find myself in that mode, sitting at that table, making my demands. Hurry up, get it here. Don't you know I've got other things to do? Of course, there's another word you can use to describe him. It's also you. We all get it. We all get in these modes where we think what we want is what's so important and what's the choice that we're making. Well, we're pulled in so many different directions at the same time. Life has gotten much too noisy. You know, we have a saying in our society, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know what I find out? I got a lot of wheels that like to squeak. So So I spend a lot of my time running around oiling everybody's wheels, and you know what I'm just trying to get? I'm just trying to get silence. I just want everything to stop squeaking so I can focus on things and so I can get things that I think are important accomplished. And so I just run around and I want everybody to be silent for just a moment. Give me a chance to catch my breath. And I'm looking out at your faces and you know what? You're there too. We've got so many things in our life, it's just gotten too noisy. I love my cell phone, but sometimes I feel like dumping it in a bucket of Clorox, seriously, so that it just won't buzz anymore because I'm tired of just the noise. So what's the choice that we must make? Well, if we're going to live in a growing relationship with God, we're going to have to choose importance over urgency. We're going to have to choose the things that are important and not just the things that become urgent. Now, we've been trying to define these terms because it's important if we're going to make these choices that we know exactly what we're choosing. So when I say the word important, what I am talking about is of great significance or value, likely to have a profound effect on the success and survival or well-being. So that's important. Now, what about this other word? Well, the word urgent means demanding immediate action or attention. It just means it's trying to force its way into the front of the line. And contrary to popular belief, important and urgent are not synonyms. There are many things in my life that try to make itself urgent, but you know what? It's just not all that important. And the funny thing is many of the things that are important are the things that I have to take at a slow and steady pace. They aren't things that scream out, pay attention to me. See, it doesn't work that way. Just because it has been labeled urgent does not mean it's important. I have people all the time that call me at Lexus and they have problems in their life and they want things to go this way and that way. And they want it now or yesterday. And I don't have as many people because they know usually the response they get is, well, today's just not your day. By the way, tomorrow's not looking good either. I mean, when we have urgent, everybody thinks their problem is the most important problem in the universe. What's breaking in my life? What's burning down around me? That's the thing you should pay attention to. Don't you understand? This is my problem. This is my emergency. This is my urgent. So your urgent needs to become, my urgent needs to become your important. And they try to crowd themselves into the way. You know what the problem is? A lot of times, I let them do it. I let them do it. I let them force their way in the front of the line. A lot of times, the things that are important go by the wayside versus the things that are just urgent because I'm seeking silence. I'm just trying to get it to stop. Well, it doesn't work out because urgent requests put us in crisis mode. Now, how many people have ever used the phrase, I do my best work under stress? I'm not one of those people. I'm not a very good worker when I'm stressed. As a matter of fact, crisis mode increases my stress. You want to watch me get upset? Keep powering on to me. And you'll find out, yeah, I have a switch. And when I reach a point, that switch flips, and I can be a not-so-nice person. That's what happens when you get stressed. Crisis mode lowers our ability to rest. Have you ever gone to bed at night, and you're laying there in the bed, and you just begin to mull over all the things you have to do the next day? And you just keep going, and you keep going, and you keep going, and you keep going, and before you know it, you get to the end of the list, but the alarm clock goes off, and it's time to get up and start the day. And you didn't rest. You couldn't turn it off because you're working in crisis mode. You're paying attention to the things that are urgent. It stretches our focus. As I begin to work in crisis mode, and I've got this fire over here and this fire over here and this fire over here, and I only got one bucket. So I have to put a little bit on this fire and a little bit on this fire and a little bit on this fire and then run back over here and put a little bit on this. And you know what the problem is? I'm maintaining the fires instead of extinguishing them. So that means the next time a fire starts up over here, I now have four fires instead of three. See, it stretches us out. It makes us go in too many different directions. And believe it or not, it decreases our productivity. You're probably thinking, this sounds like a manager's meeting. Well, it sort of is. I'm managing your relationship with Christ. If you're working in crisis urgent mode all the time, you're not as productive as when you work on a plan. If all you're doing is just taking care of the squeaky wheel, then you do understand something behind it is waiting to squeak next. And you're never going to be as productive as if you were, as if you actually were focused on the important things in life. Now, we would like to think that we in America created this problem. I mean, after all, we are an industrialized nation, we seek capitalism, and we work 24/7 all the time, but you know what? This important over urgent, it's not a new problem. As a matter of fact, Jesus happened upon two sisters that had this very same crisis mode mentality. And you can find their story in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. So if you have your copy of God's Word, let me encourage you to turn that way. If you didn't bring one with you, you can pull the one out the pew rack. We're going to be right there in Luke chapter 10. We're not going to move very much from here. But let me tell you the story as Luke tells it. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him being Jesus, and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Jesus' response, "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." Now, just so you know, this is a little story that every now and then I have to take a time out and I have to go read it. I do. And it's a good story because it's a cautionary story, because I can become a very Martha-minded person. Absolutely. I mean, I can get so focused on all the things that I've got going on in my life, and I begin looking around and say, "Well, they're not doing as much as me. What's their problem? What's their deal?" I can be a very Martha-minded person. Don't believe me? Go ask my family. They will tell you immediately. He can be a very Martha-minded. If you don't believe them, go ask the elders, because I can become a very Martha-minded person. Thus, this little story becomes very important to me, but it also becomes very important to you, because you know what? I got a feeling we've got a lot of Marthas that sit out here. We've got a lot of people that think you've got your cape stored in the trunk, pull out and you're Superman. You've got the armor where you go off riding into battle. You've got everything that's out there. You're going to fix everybody's problems, and you're just working in urgent mode. So let's take a look at the Martha mindset. Story begins with Martha inviting people. She's going to have a dinner party, and she invites these people. So this is a good trait. Martha is willing to serve. Hospitality is important to Martha. Now, that's important. It's important to Martha that this gets done. It's important to Martha that these people come. What's being done is important to her, but Martha begins to get distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Now, if you want stress in your life, invite people to your house. I love having people over. But the stress of getting it all ready and getting my house in place and getting this in order and making sure this is clean and making sure this is picked up and making sure that the groceries are bought and the dinner is fixed. That's why we don't like Christmas. Because all these people that we just see once a year are going to come to my house, and they're going to camp out at my house, and I've got to feed them and figure out how to take care of them and meet their needs, and then we get stressed. And so Martha comes here, and she's distracted by all this thing, and we overlook that word. She's distracted. She's looking away. And the question becomes, is what's distracting her? Well, it says that she was distracted by the preparations, but what she was distracted from, well, she was probably trying to catch the lesson Jesus was teaching. You know, she's probably trying to listen to the lesson while she's stirring the cake batter. She's trying to listen to the lesson while she's scrubbing a pot or a pan. She's trying to do too many things at the same thing, and so therefore she could not focus on the lesson. But you know what else she couldn't focus on? the preparation. The very thing that was important to her, now she's got two things to do, and so she's trying to listen to the lesson Jesus is teaching and fulfill the important in her life. And she can't do both. And so she does what anybody would do in that matter. She gets frustrated. She's too busy. Now, who can blame her? There's food to cook. There's tables to set. There's feet to wash. Okay, remember, they didn't show up in cars. These people showed up at her house with dirty, stinky, smelly feet where they had been walking on dirt roads amongst the animal feces that were on the side of the road. And you didn't enter somebody's house without having those feet washed. And so somebody had to take care of the feet washing. Guests to greet. Hopefully, after she washed the feet, she washed her hands before she started shaking hands and greeting people. And you know what? As she was cooking, there were dishes to wash. And as she's doing all of this, I'm sure there's something going through her mind. She's afraid she's going to let the people down. She invited these people to her house. I mean, this was a big deal. Hospitality was huge in their culture. And could you imagine if somebody came into her house and there she was and the meal wasn't quite right? Or maybe this got burnt, or this got underdone, or this wasn't ready, or this wasn't done right. She began to tell herself that if I don't do this all, somebody's going to be let down. Somebody that's expecting something of me isn't going to get what they expected, and so then they're going to be disappointed in me, and that added to her frustration. So Martha did what most of us would do. Martha wanted help. And you know what? It's a reasonable request. I mean, after all, everybody in that house was about to eat, right? Everybody was going to participate. I mean, why should she have to do all the work? Everybody was going to be there. And so here's where she began to make her mistake, though. Martha tried to make her important, Mary's urgent. You can almost see the picture, right? Martha's in there and the pots are clanging, and I'm sure as she's getting more frustrated, the clanging is getting even louder as she's trying to get somebody's attention. Maybe she's even letting out a few sighs, maybe a few grumbles. Maybe she's making a few comments under her breath, and finally she comes to the doorway there, and she looks out there, and you can almost see the picture. The sweat is pouring down her face, and she's maybe got a little flour all over her apron, and her hair is all mussed up, and she's been working so hard, and she looks out, and there's Mary, hair all nice and neat, dressed and in place, not a drop of sweat on her. She's sitting there on the floor, kneeling right by the feet of Jesus, and she's looking at Jesus, and she's listening. And she just looks like she's getting so much out of the message. Can you not see this? Of course we can. We all go to church. We've been downstairs in the hot fellowship hall before. We've been to places where we look and everybody, it seems like I'm busy and everybody else is just sitting there. We've been there. But you see, in Martha's eyes, Mary's doing nothing. Martha begins to devalue Mary's importance. She looks at what was important to her, and she says, well, because it's important to me, it should be important to you, because you know what? You live here too. You're going to eat this meal. You have responsibilities too. So she begins to look at Mary, and let's face it, a little jealousy is sitting in, because Mary's focused on one thing. She's got that one task. And Martha's like, this isn't right. So, she demanded of Jesus to force Mary to help. Don't you love the way she approached Jesus? What was her words that came out of her mouth? Don't you care about me? What a question to ask Jesus. I wonder if she would ask that question again in a few years when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Oh, yes, she did. It was when Jesus arrived. She scolded Jesus yet again and said, if you'd have showed up on time, Jesus, Lazarus wouldn't be stuck in that grave right now. She had a habit of letting her frustration pour right out of her mouth. Me too. That's me. And she looks at Jesus and she begins to question whether Jesus even cares about her. I mean, I'm about to feed you a meal, Jesus. Don't you think you could do something to help me besides something that's just yammering out of your mouth? You know, if you'd be quiet, Jesus, Mary wouldn't have to sit here. She'd come and help me in the kitchen like she's supposed to. You get that's what she's saying, right? Now, I guess the good is she did take it to Jesus. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do, right? When we have problems, we're supposed to come and take it to Jesus. The problem is that the bad news is she tells Jesus how to fix the problem. She didn't come to Jesus openly and say, Jesus, I'm really struggling. Jesus, I could use some help. Jesus, can you do something for me? She comes to it, and not only she accused Jesus of not caring, she says, Jesus, this is how you fix my problem. Tell my sister to get off her duff and help me. That's essentially what she tells him. And I'm thinking, wow, what a way to approach Jesus. And I think about sometimes how I approach Jesus in my life, in my prayer life. Come on, isn't this what we do sometimes? Jesus, will you please go fix so-and-so? Fill in the blank. Jesus, can you just correct their problem? I'm okay. They got problems, Jesus. Let me tell you all about their problems. So, Jesus has a mindset too. He looks at Martha. I love the way he just goes, Martha, Martha. You know, I'm going to see the head shaking as he goes back and forth. And he just looks at this woman. And he begins to ask her why. Martha, why are you upset? Well, Jesus, didn't you catch it? There's a lot of people here and there's a lot of work to do. And you know what? I'm the only one doing the work and I'm frustrated because I want some help and it's hot in the kitchen and there's just too much to do. And what do you mean, why are you upset? Martha, why are you worried? What do you mean, Jesus, why am I worried? Because people are going to actually eat this food I'm going to make. And if my reputation's at stake, if it's not very good, they're going to go out and tell everybody I'm a bad hostess if they come and there's a piece of dirt on my plates. Come on, Jesus, what do you mean, why am I worried? Martha, you're trying to do too much. As a matter of fact, he tells her, you're doing a lot, but we really don't need a lot. As a matter of fact, Martha, you have choices. Now, a lot of times we look at Martha and we like, well, did Martha really have a choice? Well, she did. She could have grinned and bore it and just done what she was expected and just kept complaining with the bad attitude. She could have just quit, couldn't she? She could have said, you know what, enough is enough. I want to hear the lesson too. Dinner's going to be late. I'm going to come here. I'm going to sit and listen. And when we're done, we can all go in and fix dinner together. That was a choice. She could have done that. She could have done just good enough. Right? You know, just like stick the dinner in the microwave and hit minute 30 seconds, and when it beeps, just put it on the table and say, dinner served! And then just kind of sit down and listen. So Martha has some choices to make. One choice she could have made is in her approach. She could have approached the need for help with a plea instead of demands. She could have went to Jesus with an open book and said, you know what? I'm missing something. Maybe I'm missing just one thing. What a difference between Curly the cowboy and the man that we saw in the restaurant. Curly's just kind of meandering along on his horse. He's probably got a lot to do. He's got a whole herd of cattle to take care of. Not to mention the tourists that are along for the trip. But he just doesn't seem to be stressed about it. And you know why? One thing. He's figured it out. Now, ironically, the character played by Billy Crystal, he doesn't give him an answer. He doesn't tell him what the one thing is. And you know, Jesus has more in common with Curly the cowboy than you think, because Jesus does not actually give Martha a solution either. Do you notice what's missing from that story? Jesus does not look at Mary and say, go to the kitchen and get busy, help your sister. He doesn't even look at Martha and say, you know what? Martha, you're right. I'm sorry. I should come and help you. He doesn't do any of that. He just kind of leaves Martha hanging. And you know what? Jesus never tells her what the one thing is. I mean, he tells her it's about one thing. And he even tells us that Mary has chosen the one thing. But he just kind of leaves us to hang out and figure out, well, Jesus, what's the one thing? And most of the time, we assume that what he's talking about is about Mary listening to him teach. That's the one thing. I personally believe that is an overgeneralization because that causes us to be selfish. If the one thing is I'm supposed to listen to the teaching of Jesus, that means sermons are more important than serving. That means being fed is more important than feeding. And just so you know, that would go against Jesus' theology. After all, Jesus said, I came to serve. And last night before he was going to leave, what did Jesus say? Serve one another as I have served you. So it can't just be about the listening of a sermon versus the serving of a meal. It isn't that simple. That's not the one thing. To understand what the one thing is, we need to understand the Mary mindset behind what she was doing. And the biggest thing that I listen about Mary's mindset is listening to what Mary was not doing. Mary was not just blowing Martha off. She'd look at her and say, I got an idea. I don't like to cook. I definitely don't like to do dishes. I'm not into this whole hospitality thing. This wasn't my idea. After all, my sister invited these people. So I'm going to sneak away and try to duck into the crowd and Martha can figure all this out herself. She was not doing nothing. She wasn't just taking a moment to do a timeout and catch her breath and, you know what, just kind of veg out. It's not what she was doing. She wasn't taking a nap. She wasn't just sitting there with saying, you know what, I'm tired of doing all of this, so I'm just going to sit here and lie still like a vegetable. She wasn't playing. She hadn't picked up a checkerboard and started playing checkers. She wasn't out there shooting basketball. She wasn't knitting. She wasn't doing any of that. Her importance was making Jesus her focus. Now, that's going to look different for different people. Sometimes that means the importance of making Jesus focus is indeed sitting and listening to his word. Sometimes making Jesus your focus is praying. Sometimes making Jesus your focus is serving. But you understand what Mary had done is she had made Jesus her focal point. If you begin to look at Mary's life, she was constantly doing this, always focusing her life on who the person of Jesus is, and then doing whatever it took in the moment, even if it meant getting on her knees at the tomb when she saw him, even if it meant breaking an expensive flask of perfume over Jesus' head. No matter what it took, Mary was always interested in focusing on Jesus. You see, what Martha was doing was not bad or wrong. She was just doing it for all the wrong reasons. She wasn't having the people over to bring glory to God to Jesus. She was bringing the people over because it's what she wanted to do. It was her important. And the second her important didn't meet her needs, she began to get frustrated and she wanted to make it urgent for Mary. It was an obligation to her, not a ministry. We used to have a man back in Charlottesville. His name was Tanner. He passed away last year. And he used to have a saying that nobody in the church should have two jobs until everybody has one job. I love Tanner, but I disagree with him. Nobody in the church should have a job. Everybody in the church should have a ministry. If what you're doing has become a job to you, stop. Don't do it. Because you know why I do a job? Because they pay me to do it. And the moment it's about me being paid to do it, then you know what? We begin to feel like we're being taken advantage of. When I'm being paid to do this is not compensation enough for the effort I'm putting into it. Come on, you've never heard this in a church before? Her focus became the tasks. All the things that she was doing. And then you know what happened? Amazingly, or not so amazingly, it became herself. She began to look at Jesus and say, you must not care about me because you're not meeting my needs. I'm not being fed. So I guess I should squeak a little. Make it urgent because it's important to me. You see, finding your focus means finding a priority in your life. And this is real simple. Back when God wrote the Ten Commandments, he says, no other gods before me. That's simple. Jesus to the front of the line. Jesus is the important. The rest of the stuff is just urgent. If it's not part of your ministry for Jesus, then you know what? It goes second, third, fourth. Make the line behind it, but don't push it to the front. Jesus tells us that no one can serve two masters effectively. What did you say? You'll hate the one and love the other? You can't be done. You can't have two importance. There can only be one important in your life. The world will always fill our lives with urgent distractions. You fix one thing, I promise you something else is going to break. You correct one problem, there will be another one waiting for you. They're always going to find something that is there to pull us away from that particular focus. And you know what? I'll let them. I mean, I will justify that, you know what? There's always tomorrow. The sun's going to set, the alarm's going to go off tomorrow, and tomorrow I will do better. Tomorrow, Jesus, I promise, I'll make you important. But the truth is we have to choose. We have to look at God and make the choice that we're going to choose important over urgent. So there's one more blank that you can fill in this morning, because it's what we tell God. God, you're next after I have to, literally, fill in the blank, folks. After I accomplish this, God, I promise you're next. After I finish this, God, I promise I'm going to take care of this. My relationship with you, I promise you I'll fix it. If you write something in that blank, then here's my challenge. Hang it up on your refrigerator. Accomplish that task and see if you're ready to follow Jesus then. You know what my guess is? There's going to be something else that goes in the blank. And when you finish that task, you're going to find something else to put in that blank. And you're going to keep filling in the blanks until you know what? It's all gone. It's all passed you by. So this is the last sermon in this particular series, and we're going to take 7 weeks, and we're going to talk about our prayer life, which will feed from this series. And then when we're done, we're going to talk about I quit. This will actually start in October. And I'm going to specifically outline 5 things in your life that if you're going to make this choice, Jesus important versus what's urgent in my life, I'm going to give you 5 things that you must quit if you're going to follow Christ, if you're going to live in a growing relationship. But first, we're going to talk about prayer for 7 weeks. And it's not a break in the sermon series. It is just the prayer thing fits. And you'll understand when we go through this prayer thing, it fits right between these two perfectly. But let's talk about today. What's important to you? Does your blank have anything else in it besides Jesus? If it does, let me encourage you to start evaluating your life. Maybe you make him important by today is today. You need to seal that relationship. You need to follow the Lord in baptism. You need to commit your life to him. Maybe today as you look at your blank and say, you know what I've got in that blank, it's urgent, but it's not really all that important. If the world ends, it'll all be okay. But you do realize if the world ends and that blank doesn't say Jesus, it's not all going to be okay. Because what is urgent is not always going to be what's important.